of the famous Forum in Montreal, the Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 2-4. I'm Zach Vanoss, and co-host, as per usual, one Sean O'Neill.
How are you?
Yeah.
Good to be here.
That's your name.
That is.
Caught you by
surprise. Doing good so far. We're off to a good start.
Rocket start. Welcome to the 2-4, your iTunes-approved podcast.
Yeah, so... Obviously, you found us, but I mean, go on there, subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe. Feel free to leave comments, rate us. It's fun to be in the iStore, that's for sure.
Yeah, our logo's not there yet for some reason, and I was trying to figure out how to get that on there properly. Apparently, it just takes a while. That's just one of the things that you got to deal with when you're dealing with iTunes is the artwork that goes with your podcast takes a little longer than the actual podcast to get on there.
But the good stuff's on there. Our silky smooth voices are on there.
Exactly. No, we've got the stuff that matters. Our opinions. Our thoughts on the Habs. And if you're wondering, how do I find it on iTunes? Let me tell you. You can A, go to iTunes. Go to the iTunes store and simply search the 2-4. Write it out, the 2-4. And in the podcast section, it'll pop up right there, one of your first ones. And but if that's too complicated, if you're not, on themontrealbias.com, just scroll down, mostly to the bottom of the page. You'll see the logo right there for the 2-4. Click on that. I believe underneath it simply says to download from the iTunes store. Click here, and it'll take you to the link as well. So plenty of places. Or if you got your iPhone or your smartphone of any variety and you want to hear us on there, you can simply follow our RSS feed. And as soon as we upload these, the 2-4 will be available for you to listen to on those as well. Welcome to the 21st century.
I know.
Look at us.
Pretty exciting.
I'm excited. I can't lie about that. I won't lie about that. So here's what we got coming up today. We got, obviously, our opening 10 questions in which we discuss the Habs in the league. We're going to be speaking with Graham Nichols, who's the editor and blogger, podcaster, you name it, for a website called The Sixth Sens, Ottawa Senators. So we'll be talking about the Friday night game, the future of the Sens, which is a team that's hard to figure out right now, in fact. What else we got? Well, we'll see. We got our three stars coming up.
We'll go from there.
Are you prepared with your three stars?
I am prepared with my three stars.
Do you want to jump
they're,
right
they're
in?
They're pretty good, I'm going to warn you.
Oh, they. I mean, I've never seen you bring three bad stars.
Well,
we've only done two. We've only done two of these.
We only have done two.
I'm cutting you some slack.
One of them wasn't very good.
No, one wasn't. These things happen. All right. You want to jump right into the opening 20?
Three really good stars.
Really good stars.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm worried. Also, if you find us on the iTunes store, there is the little explicit red square beside us. Don't be scared by that.
I thought that was fucking unnecessary.
Exactly. Exactly. No need for that. I don't, you know... You put it on there so that you can safely get away with if something slips out, you don't get in trouble. Feel good about that?
I do feel good. I feel a lot safer now.
Good. I'm glad. Now we're flying without a net. We're flying without a net.
Yeah.
All right. You ready?
I am ready.
Jump into the opening 20. Hit me.
All right. First off, Pekka Rinne just signed with the Nashville Predators. 7 years, $49 million. Does that mean the Habs are going to have to pay Carey Price Pekka Rinne money?
See, the first thing about that explicit thing is now we can say Pekka's name and not have to worry.
You were worried about saying his name before?
Yeah. Could offend somebody. Pekka? It's right in there.
I suppose.
All right. It's not going to be that amount. They're going to get him cheaper. I think it's going to be maybe the same length, but I think a little bit cheaper. I don't think it's quite Pekka Rinne money.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of GMs right now that are pretty unhappy with what Nashville did. Anytime anyone signs a contract like this, it sort of resets the market. And, you know, they are comparable in terms of accomplishments, I suppose, in terms of stats. But that's a, I mean, $7 million per year cap hit is really high, and I don't think there's a lot of teams that are going to be willing to shell that money out. And, you know, my guess, like you said, is Montreal manages to squeeze Carrion for a bit lower than that.
I think maybe, six. Even 6.5.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, they might even go longer. You know, if you do 10 years at six per, it's still a $60 million contract, but it's less of a cap hit. I could see them doing something like that, but I can't see them going quite up to $7 million a year. That's a big chunkier cap.
And I don't mind having Carey for 10 years. I don't mind him being the goalie for the next decade.
No, I mean, if this is the direction the league's headed in with these 8, 9, 10, 12, 15-year contracts, you know, Carey and PK are the two guys you have to lock down, absolutely. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. You know, $7 million is a big hit, though. I think, like I said, there's a lot of people that aren't happy with that contract. It's pretty high, and I do think that the Habs will be able to get Carey for a little bit under that value.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're in the 6-6.5 range. The length, maybe, as you say, maybe a little bit longer, but that's Pekarina is a good goalie, but $7 million. I mean, that's Scott Gomez money. Only the elite players get that kind of cash.
Only the cream of the crop.
Exactly. Number two, what is the solution to Montreal's power play woes? What we're looking at right now, 14.3%. That puts us tied for 22nd in the NHL overall. I mean, this is a team that normally lives and dies by the power play. So being tied for 22nd, it's just not going to get the job done. Well, how are you going to fix this?
I don't know. Like you said, I mean, you know, this is a team that isn't great at even strength, and they really need to be scoring on the power play if they want to have a chance to win some games. I think when and if Markov comes back, that's a big piece right there. He's really good on the power play. He sets a lot of stuff up. So I think that's one big piece right there. But I think they're really missing Kirk Muller.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, he was the architect behind the power play. He's the main reason I would say they had so much success over the past couple of years. And I really think they're missing him, and I don't know what you do. I don't know if you can make a couple calls to him even though he's got another job. I don't know if you bring in a new assistant coach, a specialist, or if you just try and look at some of the game tapes from the last couple of years. But I think it's a game planning thing and a strategy thing more than a personnel thing.
Without bringing Muller back, are they in serious trouble?
They're in a bit of trouble, I think. The other thing they're missing is that, you know, sort of thundering shot from the point we've had the past couple of years. But I really think Muller made that power play go, and I don't know if Jacques Martin has it in him to sort of find the solution a third of the way through the season.
Yeah, I've got to admit, it concerns me, and I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think you look at this thing, and this isn't a surprise. When Kirk Muller got away the end of last season, I really was concerned that the power play, it was going to be a problem. And so far, as we've seen, it just hasn't been clicking. Now, like you say, win if Markov returns. I mean, it is a win, I suppose, but I'm you know, who knows when he'll be back. Then, yeah, he'll help. But to say I have an actual solution besides bringing Kirk Muller back, that's the best I can give you, too.
Yeah. Number three, the NHL refs. Are they being unfair in their treatment of one Pernell Carl Subban?
Yeah, you know what they are. Because there's very few players in the league who can, you know, ice the goalie and get a unsportsmanlike for it. On the, you know, does Subban bring it on himself a little bit? I suppose you could make that argument, but I still think it's he didn't deserve, of all the calls, and we'll get into what happened on Saturday night at the Garden a little bit later, but of all the calls, and I know some people are crying about the refs, that was the one that I said, what are you talking about? I mean, no, I've never seen that call in the years I've been watching hockey where somebody shoots a little bit of ice at the goalie and gets an unsportsmanlike, especially in the scenario that was going on. I mean, Montreal was down. They were the visitors, down by a goal. You just don't make that call at that point.
Yeah, that was a really bizarre call. And, you know, I usually try and avoid these sort of conspiracy theories, which, you know, to explain why my team isn't winning games. But, you know, players do develop reputations, especially young players, and it's hard to get out of those. And Subban, rightly or wrongly, does have a reputation around the league as, I don't know, a bit of a hothead, a bit of a showboat. And I think, you know, it's rubbed some people the wrong way, and it's probably rubbed the refs the wrong way a little bit, too.
How else do you explain that call?
Yeah, exactly. And once you start to develop that reputation, rightly or wrongly, it's hard to shake. And I think, you know, he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt, put it that way.
Okay, no, I think that's actually a great way to put it, is he's not getting the benefit of the doubt. But, I mean, I know Subban talks a lot out there, and I know he's you know, some players make a great career getting under people's skin. And Subban, I, you know, going forward, that's what he's going to do. But, I mean, a guy like Maxime Lapierre was certainly had to be as annoying as Subban, and he didn't even get those calls. I just, that was the one call on Saturday night that I just couldn't understand, especially considering the time and place that it took place in that game.
I agree.
All right, number four is this. Sean and I, we send the questions back and forth. We pick out our favorite 10 from what we come up with. And when Sean sent me this one, I was laughing already, so I'm excited. Is this the year AK-46 puts it all together?
Well, first off, I mean, I'll give him credit where credit's due. He has been really good, you know, so far this season. But we've seen good stretches out of him before. It just sort of happened to come at the beginning of the year this time. I mean, maybe he has a career year because, you know, everyone has one, at least.
Yeah, no matter what, at some point you have a career year.
By definition, yeah.
Exactly.
So, maybe he's maturing a bit. Maybe he's, you know, maybe he's a little less hot and cold than he used to be. I don't, you know, he'll always be that sort of enigmatic type guy. But for now, you know, he's been good, so I'm not going to dump on the guy when he's playing well. Maybe this is the best we've seen him. Maybe he has taken a step forward.
God, I can't believe I'm saying this. And I'm not saying, like you say, he's going to be a hot and cold guy forever. No doubt about that. But when he came back for the third period against New York on Saturday night, right at the beginning of the period, they showed the bench, grinning ear to ear. He wasn't that normal vacant stare that freaks me out a little bit. I don't know that he's having more fun playing this year. I don't know that he's more engaged, but it looks like it a little. And so to that degree, then yes, like you say, perhaps we might see a little more from him. And so far we have than we have in the past. But, you know, one pissy game where he doesn't like what Martin does, or he doesn't even like the combo, he doesn't get the time on the power play like he wants, and, you know, he could be right back. So I'm not saying this is the year AK-46 puts it all together, but I'm definitely not saying that, actually. But, you know, like you say, he's looked good so far, and he does seem to be having some fun out there, which is a start.
Yeah, he looks like he gives a crap, so that's nice.
Yeah.
Number five, this is an interesting question. How many teams from the Northeast are going to make the playoffs?
I've been wondering. Since you sent me this one, I've really been trying to figure that out. I'm going to say three. But I'm not going to say which three.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the one, you know, going into the season, this was widely considered the weakest division in hockey, probably with just cause. But you look at the rest of the East, I don't see, you know, if you look at the Atlantic, Pittsburgh and Philly are the only guaranteed playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, New York will be in the mix, but you might only get two out of the Atlantic. And, you know, in the Southeast, Washington and Tampa are probably the only two guaranteed teams.
I don't even know that Tampa Bay is a guaranteed team.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if those four make it, that leaves four other spots, and it's certainly not inconceivable that, you know, the Leafs, the Sabres, the Bruins, and the Habs all make the playoffs. I think the Bruins will bounce back. I think Ottawa, you know, I think this is temporary. I think Ottawa is not a playoff team. And I think those other three, Montreal, Toronto, Buffalo, they're all going to be in the mix. I think four is a lot to ask out of any division, so I'm going to go with three as well. And like you, I'm going to hold off on who those three would be. I think Boston and Buffalo for sure. And I think Toronto and Montreal are going to battle for maybe only one spot. Maybe two, but maybe only one spot.
Is the rivalry back?
I think so. I think we talked last week about whether Toronto's for real or not. I think they're a borderline playoff team. I don't think they're the best team in the division or one of the best teams in the conference. But if, you know, these two teams are fighting for the 6, 7, 8 spot, then yeah, that the rivalry's back, at least compared to what it has been the last decade.
I'll take it. And yeah, no, three. And I guess it's Boston. I mean, look what they did to Toronto the other night. They're still a talented team, no question about that. All right, do you believe Georges Larac's claims of widespread steroid usage in the NHL? And I underlined the word widespread.
Well, I mean, you know, the sort of gut reaction when a story like this comes out is just to sort of scoff and shrug and say it's just an ex-player looking for attention. But we all kind of did the same thing when the baseball steroid stories first started to leak out 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was. And, you know, I think it's certainly possible. I don't think steroids give you the advantage in hockey that they would in, say, baseball or football. But, you know, the NHL has been criticized for having a relatively lax policy on performance-enhancing drugs, and I think, you know, this could be a story that's been under the radar up to this point, but I think we're going to hear a lot more of this.
Well, when you look at it, I mean, there's 700 players in the NHL. These are highly competitive individuals looking for any edge that they can get. So yes, is there steroid usage in the NHL? Of course there's steroid use, or at least performance-enhancing drugs, if they be they steroids or whatever. Widespread? I don't know. Like you say, when Jose Canseco came out with this, we said this is just a guy looking for attention. We know who he is. We know he likes to talk. And I would say the same about Georges Larac. I think George comes from a much better place than Canseco. I think he's a much more likable guy. He's a very likable guy, but he's also a guy who likes attention and likes making the story about himself to some degree. But that doesn't mean what he's saying isn't true. Widespread, I don't think it's going to be as epidemic as baseball had it. But like you say, it's hard to tell. These competitive individuals, I mean, the majority of the people you meet who are a professional athlete, these are far more competitive than anybody else you're going to meet in day-to-day life. That's why they got there, for one thing. It's natural-born talent, but fiercely competitive. If they can find a way to give them an edge and nobody's checking it, it's going to happen. The question, I guess, is just widespread or not.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to have to, you know, reevaluate the last decade and a half.
No, it's not going to be
the
like
way
baseball.
We did with baseball.
No.
But I think we're going to find out that it's a lot more widespread than we thought. Number seven is Ken Hitchcock, the answer in St. Louis. He was announced as the head coach earlier today.
Yaroslav Halak figuring his stuff out is the answer in St. Louis.
And Hitchcock might help with that. He is a good defensive coach.
Yeah, it depends. If you're asking long-term answer, short-term answer, I think that is a big difference. Ken Hitchcock is well known to be a guy who can rally the troops quickly and fix a situation like St. Louis has right now. Long term, I mean, if St. Louis is looking for a cup in the next few years, I don't know that Ken Hitchcock is necessarily that guy. But is he going to help with this season? And at least, let's say, the next 2 months? I say for sure.
Yeah, I think he's a good coach. I don't think St. Louis is that good of a hockey team. There's been a lot of buzz around them for a couple of years now, and I've never really understood it. They have some nice young pieces, but it's not a very talented team. And I honestly look at their record, and I think that's kind of right about where they should be. You know, I understand they're disappointed. I understand why they made the move, but I don't think this is a great team waiting for the right man at the helm. I think they're a, you know, below average team. I think he's a good coach, but I think the team's ceiling is probably 7th or 8th in the West.
Yeah. That's what I was kind of surprised is everybody's... I mean, I expected Ken Hitchcock to be announced as a head coach in the NHL today. I thought it was going to be in Columbus. I think that's the biggest shock in this story. All right, number 8. If you could only have one player, or if you could have one of these players for the next 10 years, only one of them, though, which are you choosing? Taylor Hall, Tyler Seguin, or the Nuge, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins?
Man, that is a really tough question. All three have been a lot of fun to watch. I think if I had to go with one, and maybe it's just because he's the newest one and maybe the most exciting at this point, but I think I'd go with the Nuge, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, which is funny because he was sort of the least heralded of the three coming out of junior, but his rookie season's been really impressive. And look, all three are great. They're all three are, I think, franchise players. But I like Hopkins. He's got playmaking ability. He seems to be able to finish. He looks pretty clutch. He just seems to have a little bit of a sort of aura about him, and I think he's going to be a really special player.
For me, it was between Hall and Hopkins. I'm taking Hall just because I feel like there's a leadership quality there, and I would pick him to be the guy that's going to be the captain someday. I agree with you with your evaluation of Nugent Hopkins. So Tyler Seguin, I mean, like you say, once again, great player. Yeah, Kessel's firing on all cylinders right now for the Leafs, but going forward, I think they'd rather have Seguin. But I'm just gonna take Hall, and that's pretty much, you know, a three-headed coin flip when you really get down to it.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I'm not looking forward to having to play Tyler Seguin for the next 10 years. That's for sure. He is a lot of fun to watch, though. I mean, that game against Toronto, he's got some wheels on him.
But for a team like Toronto, I mean, Kessel's young. We do forget that. But for a team like Toronto, that is, you know, is a building team. There's no question about that. Is Seguin the better fit than Kessel? I gotta think Seguin would be better than Kessel.
Oh, God, yeah. Look, Kessel's really good, especially when he's on, like he has been this year. You know, he's an all-star caliber player. I think Seguin's has the potential to be a notch above that, to be a franchise-type player, a captain, the face of your franchise for 12 years, give you a Hart trophy or an Art Ross trophy in his future as well. So I would rather have Seguin. Number 9, Scott Gomez will be making his return shortly. Where do you play him once he's back?
I won't steal your answer, but it is the correct answer. You know what? And we've spoken quite a bit about Lars Eller, far more than I expected to be talking about Lars Eller this season. He's fitting really well at center. He's taken a stride. You can read a good article by Pat Wallace today on the Montreal Bias about Lars Eller and how Montreal, right now, looks like they robbed St. Louis on that Yaroslav Halak trade. As much as it ruined, people were very upset when it happened. Right now, I mean, we got the better end of the stick for sure. We talked about Eller. He seems better at center. He seems like he's going forward. And Scott Gomez, like I've said, he's not playing the way he should. He's a disappointing player. He eats up way too much cap space. But they like him in the locker room. They asked him today, where, you know, would he be mind playing a wing, trying another position, doing something just to get him back in the lineup? He said no. So knowing that from him, when he comes back, you know, play him on the wing.
Maybe. I mean, he really does seem more suited for the center position because he does have...
Oh, really? Is he blowing you away with what he does at center? How much of a step back could he take playing on the wing right now?
Yeah, I mean, give it a shot. Why not? And it's tough when you have a guy who's injured who is a guy that you apparently want on your roster. And you know, the team's been playing well and you have to sort of find a spot for him. Because Eller's been better than he has, and you don't want to bump Eller back down. So I don't know where you put him. Maybe you're right. Maybe you do put him on the wing. I mean, my snarky answer to this is that they should send him to Hamilton, which I actually do believe.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not your snarky answer. That's what you think is the case.
It is. But that's not going to happen, and they do have to find a spot for him. And, you know, I think you're right. Just give him a shot on the wing, and maybe something happens. Because they've tried everything else at this point. Nothing else has worked.
It's exactly it. He said, like... If this is he does seem like a very likable guy. I really feel I like the guy. So, and that's one of the reasons you can't send him down to Hamilton is simply because they like him in the locker room, and you know it wouldn't feel right. I think based on the fact that he's a veteran who's well liked in the locker room, and for you know 8 million other reasons. But at the same time, if he's willing to try a different position, he can't get any worse than things have gone. Just stick him on the wing. Give it a try. Worst case scenario, he comes up with 0 points and coughs up the puck every time he seems to skate into traffic. Then you're right at the status quo. Big deal. Number 10, do you blame the reffing for the Saturday night loss?
No. You know, the team didn't play great, and I think they're just kind of due for a loss, frankly. There were some questionable calls, the one on PK being the most obvious example. Look, there were some pretty bad calls, but I think it's really rare that you can actually blame the refs for a loss. I think the team went out a little bit flat. They didn't look great. They're playing a pretty good team on the road, a team that's pretty hot right now, and they just came up a little bit short. I think they were due for a loss. The refs didn't help, but you know, the team didn't help themselves very much either.
No, exactly. Like, I watched this game. I thought the reffing was absolute shit, but that doesn't mean Montreal lost on account of the reffing. The Subban call, I've already said, I didn't get that one. The Blunden call was confusing, but they may have got it right, despite the fact that, you know, there's a lot of gray area there. But Montreal, you look at those penalties in the first, for the most part, they were legit. As you said, they seemed a little bit slow from having played the night before. I think it was just a more of laziness that they got called for what they got called for. I liked what happened after that, and we'll get into that. They showed some character for sure, and, you know, I took that loss as almost as much as I would a win in the fact that there was a character performance after that, and the team seemed to rally a little bit. But no, I'm not going to blame the reffing. Was it bad? Yes. Was it the reason they lost? No.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's move on. Do you want to continue on this topic, though? Let's talk about Saturday night, because, as you said, it felt like a loss that was due anyways.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough situation. two nights and two games, both on the road. You're going from Ottawa to New York, you know, a hostile environment, taking on a team that got off to a slow start, but they've looked good their last three or four. And you know, they'd won four in a row, so you're kind of due-ish for a loss anyways. And I think it was just a tough game. They got off to a really bad start. But like you said, they fought back. They made a game of it. And I'm like you. I almost think that's more important than whether they get the 2 points or not.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, I was watching that game, and after the first period, I really thought it was going to be one of those. It was a Saturday night. I had some people over to watch the game. We were, you know, if things seemed like they were going downhill, and by the second period, Montreal really would have seemed out of it. Would have been one of those nights where you're content to leave the game on, turn on a bit of music, and see what happens.
Take your pants off, start a fire in somebody's kitchen.
Well, that happened anyways. Well, but well, it's a Saturday night. I already said that part, all right? But no, in the end, it was a game that you watched till the final minute, and Montreal really felt like they could come back in it at any point, which is, it's what I want to see is, when the chips get down, does the team still, do they quit, or is there going to be a little fight? And there was a good amount of fight, despite the fact that maybe the calls didn't go their way. I mean, they could have packed it in early. Being upset with the calls, whether you agree with them or not, the guys on the ice generally don't like calls that go against them. They could have packed it in. They didn't. I liked what I saw from Brian Gionta. I liked what I saw from Camilleri and Plekanec. Those are three guys who have to be on top of it if the team's going to go forward, and those are the guys who have to kind of put it on their back and say, hey, no, we're going to keep playing. Lars Eller once again looked very good. Travis Moen once again, I mean, I keep expecting him to recede back into the other Travis Moen, but he played a solid game. The whole team just felt like they were going to keep competing until the end, and they did. And I think you can take that and feel good about that. Tomorrow night's going to be interesting against Edmonton. If you're listening after that, well, you tell us what happens. But the one question that seemed to be lingering in Montreal today, and I didn't think this was a question going in, and I think a lot of the people who had this question this morning and Sunday were probably lying to themselves. A lot of people were saying, well, they should have started Budaj. It was clear that Carey Price was tired, but I don't know that everybody thought that on Friday night after they beat Ottawa. I think that was one of those 20-20 hindsight things that, oh, if you're going to lose anyways, you might as well have got your backups and work. Would you, though, have started Budaj on Saturday?
I thought he was going to get one of the two. I was a little surprised, but I mean, Carey was coming off a big win.
It was a five-day rest. They had 5 days of rest, 6 days of rest, whatever.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, the guy's a workhorse. I do think Budaj needs to get more playing time just because you can't have Carey. You can't ride Carey for 70 games every season. And Budaj, I think, is more capable as a backup than Alex Auld was.
Well, what would you have done?
I actually probably would have reversed it and put Budaj in Friday and had Carey for the Saturday night game. But
I like that move. I'm going to be honest.
I don't have a problem with Carey back to back.
Me neither. I want to see a little bit more of Budaj, and we better see him this week, because otherwise, what's the point of paying Peter Budaj? What are we paying him? $1.2 million?
Sounds about right, yeah.
What's the point of, you know, you might as well bring Auld back in if he's only going to get 8 starts all season. And Budaj's a, you know, he may not be a starter for us, but there are certain teams out there that he could probably be starting for.
Yeah, Budaj's a perfect, you know, I was really happy with that signing. He's really a perfect number two goalie. He's got some starting experience. He's, like you said, a borderline starter in the league, but at least perfectly suited for the number two spot. He's not going to, you know, there's not going to be a goalie controversy. Everyone knows who's number one, who's number two, but he's a guy who can go in every, whatever, 5 or 6 games and give you a decent shot at winning.
I would have, to be honest, I would have started Price in both those games. And that's just because of the funk that Montreal started the season with. You want to get some wins, and, you know, Carey Price gives you your best shot at that. And I don't think the fact that he allowed 4 goals had much to do with the fact that he'd played the night before in Ottawa. I get it more to do with the fact that he just didn't have his best game. I don't think fatigue, what are we, a month into the season? He had 5 days rest, and he has to play back-to-back. I just don't see fatigue being that much of a factor. It was probably the right, I mean, Budaj probably should have played one of those games, and I like the call that you make. I think maybe they would have been smart to go with Budaj against Ottawa and then have Carey go against the Rangers. But going into those games, considering everything that come, and, you know, you got a little momentum, you probably want to keep that going as well. I would have started Carey both ways, so I'll knock Jacques Martin for plenty of things. But for starting Carey in both those games, no, I wouldn't. I would maybe start Budaj tomorrow against Edmonton, though.
Yeah, at least one of these games coming up, or maybe one of those, you know, weird West Coast games that, you know, maybe you play him against Phoenix or something. I think we will see him this week.
We better.
But I think you're right. It's a 2020 thing. We're still early in the season. Like you said, we've been on a bit of a roll, still trying to claw our way out of the, you know, that hole we dug ourselves into. Do you like how I use we? Because I am part of the team.
We use we a lot. I listen back to this podcast.
I will defend my right as a fan to use we.
We named the site the Montreal Bias. We in no way were pretending that we're, you know, above using the we. We use the we.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big defender of that.
Nous sommes les Canadiens.
Thank you.
That's all I'm saying.
I can't. Where was I? Anyways, you know, I think they're still trying to dig their way out of that hole. I think, you know, if come December, January, February, that the team's back where they should be, then we'll see Budaj a little bit more. Maybe that's where he gets the majority of his starts, and then, you know, come...
Which isn't bad choice.
And then come March or April, once we're making that playoff push and carries a bit more rested than he otherwise would be, you go back to using him 6 games out of 7.
All right, let's switch gears off the Saturday night game and just in kind of more the general sense of the team. Today was the first I heard of the real solid rumblings that there seems to be everyone's agreeing on of the Subban sophomore slump. Thoughts?
I wrote a pretty, what I thought was a strongly worded article a couple weeks back.
You thought it was strongly worded because you sent it to me all in bold.
I did.
That doesn't mean it's any better just because you bold all the text.
Fair enough. I keep forgetting that.
I know. And exclamation points at the end of every sentence. Editor's job is never through.
No. You know, I thought at that point that the criticism was really undeserved.
Yeah.
I still lean that way, but I can't hide the fact that he hasn't been great. And, you know, the guy is... I love the guy. He's one of my favorite players on the team. And maybe, you know, it's part of the reason I defend him so staunchly, but there's no getting around the fact that he hasn't been spectacular. I mean, you just have to look at his numbers. That being said, he's still young, and... You know, a lot of the team hasn't been great up to this point. And I do think it'll come around, and I think...
But is it going to be a sophomore slump, or is it going to come around next season?
No, it'll come around this season. I mean, even last year, he got off to a slow start, and he really turned things up a notch after Christmas.
Yep.
And I think, you know, I think when all's said and done at the end of the season, he's still going to have 15 goals, 45 points, a bunch of penalty minutes, and he's going to look like himself. And, you know, I really think that the worst way to try and get a young player out of a slump like that is just to heap extra pressure on him. I think if people just sort of shut up and stand back and let a young player be a young player and make the odd mistake, that, you know, it'll be worth it.
I wrote about this early in the season when I said I didn't expect PK to have a sophomore slump. And I said, because the sophomore slump, I believe, stems from the fact that rookies burst into the NHL where they're told it's a different game, it's faster, it's more difficult, and that they expect to struggle. And rookies that have success then say to themselves, this NHL thing isn't as hard as I expected. Then they get into a summer where they're suddenly, for the first time in their life, they're pro athletes. They play in the NHL, their lifelong dream. So maybe they don't work as hard. Maybe they expect things to be a little easier. I think that's the reason the sophomore slump happens. I don't believe that's the case for PK Subban. I think right now, it's in fact almost the opposite for Subban, is he's just trying to do too much. He's put himself in the place where he's the defensive leader on this team. And I think right now, PK's just got to get back into his game a little bit, back into what he did last year where he was trying to learn more, whereas this year he's tried to take it up a notch, and maybe he's not quite ready to make that leap. I think Markov returning, and I hate the fact that for the second time in this show we've said Markov returning might help things, because I feel like we've been saying that for 5 years and Markov never plays, but Markov returning may take some of the onus off PK to be the guy that's doing it all. I mean, right now he is that booming shot we hope to have from the blue line on the power play. I think if PK can just take it back a notch, if he realizes he doesn't have to do it all and he can just play his game, then he'll figure it out. And like you, I'm not worried about PK overall this season. I still think 15 goals in that vicinity. He's a good player. He's a smart player. He learns from his mistakes. It's not like somebody we got to worry about who continues to make the same mistake over and over, he's going to figure it out. I'm not too worried. And I also don't think this slump seems to be as problematic as some people say it is.
No, and I think that's exactly it. I think it's just the defense has been decimated, and I think he is, you know, either trying to take on too much by himself or just because of the situation, there's a lot being thrust upon him. But I do think he'll work things out. And one thing I was wrong about heading into the season is one of the main things I had against the Markov signing was that, well, we don't need a number one defenseman. We have a number one defenseman in PK. And maybe that was a bit premature. I think he's obviously, you know, a number one defenseman in the making, but maybe, you know, maybe I jumped the gun a bit there, that he's not quite ready to be that guy you can rely on every single night to be your number one guy.
And I think that's what in his head was the case as well, is he's Montreal's number one guy, and he's got to realize he doesn't have to be.
Yeah, and I, like you said, you know, hopefully Markov comes back, maybe Campoli comes back at some point, and, you know, he's...
Can you believe we have these two guys not there?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's well, a good team if we get those guys. Well, no, you can believe it. But this is... That's a solid blue line if we somehow had those two.
It is, and, you know, I don't like, you know, every team has injuries, but people do forget that is once we get the defensive lineup in there that we thought we would have heading into the season, if that is a really solid defense 1-6. Maybe it's not the best in the league, but it's in the top 8.
Speaking of that blue line, Yaroslav Spacek is playing like the guy we thought we signed 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's been really solid. It's been, you know, it's been a pretty good season for some of those guys that we'd kind of written off, guys like Travis Moen and Yaroslav Spacek, who I wasn't expecting anything out of them heading into the season, and they've both, you know, they haven't set the world on fire, but they've done what's asked out of them, which we certainly couldn't say of Spacek the first couple of years in Montreal. He was a non-entity. And, you know, he's been really, really solid.
But it's not hard to explain the difference between Yaro and Buffalo and Yaro Yaro for the past 2 seasons with Montreal. We put him on the side that he doesn't normally play. Now he's playing his natural position, and he looks like the guy from before. I mean, it's not rocket science.
No, it's not. And I don't, you know, it's something that I don't know how the coaching staff lost track of that. And it's something that the fans, myself included, certainly lost track of. And, you know, I think that makes even arguably more of a difference to a defenseman than it does to a winger.
That's what I was going to say. And I don't think we understand the importance of your side when you're a defenseman. I certainly can't say I have any comprehension of it.
No, neither can I, really. But he does look a lot more comfortable. And, you know, comfort's a big thing, especially for a guy who's been in the league that long. And he looks, like I say, he just looks more comfortable. He looks more confident. He's doing all those little things that he should have been doing the last 2 years. And he couldn't or he wouldn't, but he is doing them now. And given how decimated the defense has been, it's been just absolutely vital that he's been able to step up like that. Because, you know, if we had the defensive problems that we had, plus Spacek was playing like he had been the last 2 years, that's a pretty scary situation for the Canadian.
All right, sticking with the blue line, they've been kind of decent these last few games. There's nobody that at least you would point a finger at and say, you know, this guy's a huge problem. So when Markov comes back, and this is already with Emelin spending some time watching the game from the press box, what do you do when Markov's back in terms of who goes out there on the ice?
Yeah, well, that was one of the other strange things is, you know, heading into the season, we said, look how much depth we have on the defense. It's ridiculous. There are going to be some pretty good players who end up sitting a lot of games. And, you know, that hasn't really been the case because of all the injuries. You know, we even got rid of Wawrinka, but once Markov comes back, there's going to be a real surplus there. And I don't know if you move one of those guys, use them as a trade piece and try and get sort of a minor guy in return, or if...
I don't think so, based on injuries.
Yeah, I think you just kind of wait until the next guy gets injured, because there are going to be injuries. But it is nice having that luxury where you're not paper thin on defense, that, you know, you don't just have 6 guys. You have 7 or 8 guys or 9 guys, so that if someone does get hurt, which they will, you can sort of plug someone else into the lineup. And, you know, I've been surprised that Emlyn's been sitting, because I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, he didn't look bad.
No, he didn't look bad at all, but he is still young. He's still learning the league, and someone else is going to get hurt, and I think you'll be able to insert Emlyn into the lineup, and he'll, you know, be able to look okay.
The way I see it, you can't send Emlyn to the AHL, because he'll just go, screw this, I'm going back to Russia. So it comes down to Diaz or Weber.
Yeah. And, you know, both of those guys are, five, six, seven guys. They're legitimate NHL players, but they're not. You're not going to cry yourself to sleep if they're not on the team. And you know, those are the type of guys that they're not going to play every game, but it's nice to have those guys at the bottom of the rotation. And like I said, you plug them in if someone gets hurt. If everyone's healthy, they move down a rung and they watch the game from the press box. I tend to think when everyone's healthy that it'll be Diaz who gets the boot.
Based on age alone, I think.
Based on age. I think I might keep him and let go of Weber. I'm not the biggest Weber fan in the world, but...
No, that was my thoughts exactly. I know what I think will happen is Diaz goes down, Weber stays, but I would preferably do the opposite.
Yeah, me too, but I think they would send Diaz down, and they like having Weber as that sort of seventh man that they can plug in.
Well, they seem to think Weber can also be converted to a forward. Jacques Martin thinks Weber can be converted to a forward now and then when need be.
Yeah, he seems to think that. I've never really...
I don't agree with
it. ...seen anything that's given me that impression personally. But, you know, the Habs have liked to do that, even, you know, beyond Weber. It's something they've been doing for 5 or 6 years now, is having those defensemen that they can put up in, on one of the bottom two lines in a pinch. And, you know, I don't really see it out of Weber, but I do... get the logic, and it is a nice sort of luxury to have.
All right, I'm going to... can I throw it over to this guy now?
Be my guest.
All right, this is going to be 5 minutes for fighting. We're talking with Graham Nichols, editor, writer, podcaster for The Sixth Sense, and we'll come back and we'll do our three stars, which Sean seems to think he's got a solid three this week.
I brought the ruckus this week.
Brought the ruckus!
I did.
Cue the music.
And they're all coming off. Both benches are empty. And we're going to have a Donnybrook right down below us here as both benches empty.
All right, so this is 5 minutes from fighting on the 2forthemontrealbias.com. We're talking with a blogger today from the Sixth Sense. Graham, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm very, very well, thank you. I guess, first off, tell us a little bit about who you are and what your website is, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the writer-editor, I guess podcast recorder for a blog devoted to the Ottawa Senators called thesixthsense.com. It's been in operation for probably about 3 years now, 3.5 years, on the Blogwood Network. And yeah, no, it's, we, you're, you know, like you, we cover the team on a semi-regular basis. We try to record podcasts every week, although we've fallen a little bit behind the eight ball on that regard. But yeah, we just try and keep our fans in touch with what's going on with the Senators and try to provide a humorous, sometimes satirical, cynical take once in a while. And yeah, that's our site.
You kind of sound like you're doing the same thing we're doing.
Yeah, along the same veins. I was checking out your site earlier. It's pretty good.
All right. Let's get into, I guess we'll address Friday night's game first. First two periods, we do have to. I'm afraid we have to. The first two periods, it was all Habs, and the third period, it seemed like Montreal really kind of fell back and stopped playing. Ottawa had a chance to get back in there. Just, you've seen the Sens through what has already been a season that has kind of shown two different teams. What did you think of the Friday night performance against Montreal?
In particular, I thought the first period was very, very slow. I thought Montreal did a fantastic job congesting the neutral zone. Ottawa just, it seemed like Ottawa was too spread out and they weren't connecting with their passes. The gaps were too big and Montreal was taking perfect advantage of that. From there, I thought Ottawa started to play a little bit better towards the latter stages of the game. Historically, Ottawa has been a fantastic third period team this year.
Yeah.
They've scored like the most, I think they've scored the most goals in the third period in the NHL this season. But it's just been, it's been kind of like, I wouldn't say metaphorically speaking, it's been kind of like Ottawa's season's been like that, where they started slow and they started to get a little bit better. And the local traditional media has kind of referred to them as the cardiac kids. So it's not really surprising to see them come on late in a game like that.
Speaking of that third period, I believe it is, in fact, that they've got the most goals in the third of all teams in the NHL right now. What is it, that the makeup of this team? Is it because they're young that once they find a little comfort in the first two periods, they figure out what to do in the third? Is it an age thing, or is it just one of those, you know, it's one of those coincidences that happen sometimes with the team?
Well, they've also allowed the most goals in the third period, too. It's tough to find pulse and put your thumb on it exactly to see what, like, what is this team? And to be honest, it's so early in the season, it's tough to really know what Ottawa has right now. Like, they're a 500 team. They have a new head coach. They have a bunch of fresh faces and players who seem to be playing at a level that we haven't seen from any of them before. Like, Erik Karlsson's almost a point-per-game player. I think Milan Mikolic's on pace for almost 50 goals. Jason Spezza is playing at a point-per-game pace. It's really tough to evaluate right now where this Ottawa team is.
Fair enough. All right, we've got a questionnaire we want to throw your way. As I was telling you before we came on air with it, you're our guinea pig for the questionnaire.
Sure.
So here we go. It's 10 questions to kind of paint a picture of at least how you see your club and how just how you watch hockey, I guess. So number one, easy. Who's your favorite player growing up?
Favorite player growing up? Oh, tough question. I'd have to say Alfredson.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I grew up a Sens fan. I was lucky enough, my parents are season ticket holders since day one, so I've kind of grown up with the franchise over the years.
Right.
And, yeah, he's just been the guy who's been here the longest, and, yeah, he's just the best player that we've had in this organization ever, so.
You may cancel a question, too. Your favorite player currently in the league, although is Alfredson technically currently in the league?
Good question. He's probably my favorite. Well, obviously I'm biased towards Ottawa, but in terms of exciting players, you know, you have your Crosby, you have your Ovechkin. I always love watching those guys play. But yeah, in terms of a little hometown bias, for sure, Alfredson.
The best move the Sens have made in the past 5 years?
Firing John Muckler.
All right. The worst move the Sens have made in the past 5 years?
Oh, Alexei Kovalev's up at the top of the list.
I was going to ask about him later.
The Brian Lee draft pick falls outside that 5 years. Let's go with the Kovalev signing.
All right. Your favorite jersey/logo in the NHL?
Chicago.
Good answer. Most overrated player in the game today?
Overrated player. That's tough. Like, I would say Jagr based off his age and the excitement that he brought back to Philadelphia coming back this season.
Fair response. All right, which Sen does the league not know about and should? Basically, who's your best-kept secret?
Best-kept secret? Are you referring to Ottawa?
Yeah, in Ottawa's case. No, for Ottawa.
Probably Colin Greening.
Why?
Just because he's at an age, like, he's a 25-year-old rookie, late-round draft pick. There's not a lot of buzz around him. Most of the rookie attention seems to be going towards the 18, 19-year-olds who came into the league this season, guys like Brian Nugent-Hopkins, Luke Adams in Buffalo. And Greening's up there in the league scoring, but he's kind of under the radar a bit right now.
All right, realistically, when do you see Ottawa's next chance at making a cup run?
Cup run? 2014, 2015.
All right, that's fair. Number nine, you can see a game live in any arena in the NHL. Which are you going to?
MSG.
And finally, your favorite NHL writer or blogger right now that you you read regularly?
Ooh, writer, blogger. I like Elliot Friedman's blog on CBC.
All right, very good. You were ready for the rapid fire.
Yeah, it was all right.
Now you'll hear it later, and there'll be a couple answers that you will think of and want to come back on them, but that's fine.
Sounds good.
Okay, first let's go to Kovalev, because you mentioned him.
Sure.
I mean, for some reason, and as a Montreal fan, I can't comprehend. I enjoyed what Kovalev was capable of when he was here. I liked it on those nights that it worked out, but I couldn't figure out why everyone wanted to keep him so badly. I was glad to see him leave. But tell us from a Sens perspective, what was the 2-year Alex Kovalev experience like?
Oh, it was awesome. It was fantastic. He was entertaining. One of the most entertaining players in the game.
When he feels like it.
I'm being a bit facetious there. To be honest, like when he signed originally, we just kind of looked at him as like a stopgap measure. We lost, obviously, Danny Healy had asked for a trade.
Yeah.
And we had to facilitate that. So I kind of looked at Alexei Kovalev as like an insulation, kind of as an installation player, just in case the return that we got for Healy wasn't good enough, at least you had Alexei Kovalev there to hopefully boost the offensive totals for the team. And at the same time, he was a recognizable name.
Yeah.
And for a team that had playoff aspirations at the time, it was just kind of like, well, let's try and put some fans in the stands kind of move. That's the way I looked at it.
It made sense. I mean, it didn't work out because I think of all the typical Kovalev runs that he had, what he did in Ottawa was what took the cake as far as Kovalev not giving a shit. But, all right, we'll switch gears, but I'm still going to stay with the Montreal vein. You guys have had Jacques Martin before. What was your experience with him as the head coach?
Personally, I thought he was good X's and O's coach.
Yeah.
He knew his systems. But when it came to adapting in-game, he never seemed to be able to adjust or make the right... He never played to how the other team was playing against you. If they were doing very well, or if Ottawa was playing poorly, he just had a hard time adjusting to what the other coach was doing well. It was always like, no, the system will take care of itself, and that's where the team will have success.
He's just not an in-game coach, is he?
No, not at all. And I think if you look back at Ottawa's playoff history against Toronto, you'll see, you know, four consecutive losses to Pat Quinn. And it just could never adapt and just finish off the Leafs. And I think a lot of fans look back at that era and they're just, you know, he was around for such a long time that you just wished that he could have gotten over that hump, but he just never could.
Yeah, Montreal, I think, you know, we were happy with how far the team went a couple seasons ago in the playoffs when Halak was on his run, when Michael Camilleri was scoring out of his mind in the playoffs. And the system worked to get us that far. But at the same time, especially for a city like Montreal where we want something exciting, he doesn't feel like the right guy.
But that's Jacques Martin hockey, though. Do you want something exciting, or do you want him to put a winner on the ice?
I want something exciting and winning, but I want my cake and I want to eat it. Is that so wrong?
No, I suppose not. But yeah, like Perry Pern fell on the sword last week.
Yeah,
and that team's won what, 3 games since. So
they won 4 in a row. Last
I can understand the rationale behind is Jacques Martin the right coach for us, because I believe you guys were off to your worst start in 70 years or something to that.
Well, effect. It was with 4 straight wins following the Perry Pern firing. The team rebounded. They lost Saturday night to the Rangers in a penalty filled affair, but.
Yeah, well, I've also heard the argument
stopped.
Too that I've read people ask the question: is he a right coach for this era in the NHL? Because if you look back at his time in Florida, this is a guy who didn't make the playoffs for 3 consecutive seasons.
Yeah,
and I think the only other year that is one of his coach teams never made the playoffs was his first year in Ottawa after he took over. And it's a fair question, I think. Like, is he the right coach for what you guys have right now?
What about the guy you guys got behind the bench right now, besides the fact that he has undeniably the best mustache in the NHL?
Yes, everybody loves the duster. No, it seems he's come in and he's put down the hammer and he said, listen, I want a team of guys that's going to skate the 200 feet of the ice, the whole length of the ice, and if you can't do that or you aren't willing to play hard at all ends of the rink, you're not going to play. And I think we're seeing that with Nikita Filatov right now, who's just been returned down to BHL. And if you're not going to play hard for this coach and earn your ice time, you're just not going to play. And it's a great, great thing to institute for this team, for such a young team. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not this team continues to respond to him as the season goes on, because as it looks right now, they're playing a little above their heads. But it'll be interesting to see where Ottawa finishes up this season.
Where do you see it going, realistically?
Well, personally, I was kind of hoping for another lottery pick this season. But it's such a weird team right now. Like, you look at them on paper and you look at the numbers and you see 55 goals allowed, the most in the NHL. And then you look at their goals for and you see that they're one of the highest scoring teams in the league. And the power play is the third overall in the league, but their penalty kill is terrible. It's so hard to find a measuring stick for this team right now. And I think as fans, it's kind of exciting because you don't really know what to get, and there are a ton of compelling storylines to follow on this team. It's just, we don't really know where it's headed this season. Everybody was kind of looking ahead 2 or 3 seasons down the road, but we weren't really sure what we had this year, and it's just kind of like a melting pot of, we don't even know.
I suppose worst case scenario for you guys right now, speaking of that lottery pick, is a 9th, 10th place finish.
No, absolutely. I think for any team that, you know, isn't in that top 5 lottery position that doesn't make the playoffs, that's the worst case scenario, because who wants to be that organization? Who wants to be like the Minnesota or Columbus of the NHL? It's not an encouraging position to be in. But like looking at some of the things that are going on right now, we have veterans who are playing really well, guys who we are hoping to have like bounce back seasons. You look at a Sergei Gonchar or Filip Kuba. Mm. These are assets you can hopefully trade at a trade deadline and get like a draft pick or two or someone who can help you out down the road and augment, you know, the current group of young players that we have. And there are some definitely intriguing scenarios moving down the line. But yeah, you want to get that lottery pick as a rebuilding organization.
All right, one last thing before I let you go.
Yeah, sure.
Do you hate the Leafs or Habs more?
That's a tough question, because if you're asking me what, if I had to go to a live experience, I would probably prefer to go to a Leafs game at Scotiabank Place, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I find the Habs fans more annoying. But, yeah, just from a rivalry perspective, obviously Ottawa hasn't played Montreal in the playoffs before, and that has a lot to do with it. So losing four times to the Reds, or to the Leafs, rather, that's a huge hurdle that you eventually want to get over.
All right, once more, the website is?
TheSixthSense.com. You can check us out on Twitter, @SixthSense. And, yeah, that's about it.
All right, well, thanks a lot for taking time for joining me here on 5 Minutes for Fighting on the 2-4, TheMontrealBias.com. That's Graham Nichols. He's the editor, writer, and occasional or hopefully more frequent podcaster from The Sixth Sense. All right, thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Take care. Yeah, you too.
And there you go. That's 5 Minutes for Fighting. That's how that goes down.
I feel as if I may have oversold my 3 stars.
Oh no! You had a little time to think about it.
No, they're pretty fantastic. I'm not gonna lie.
You want to go first then?
Oh, I can't wait any longer.
Okay, then go.
So excited! All right, 3rd star of the week. Averting my gaze outside of Montreal for a moment, Claude Giroux of the Philadelphia Flyers, having a heck of a season. I was pretty skeptical as to whether or not the Flyers' off-season makeover would work, and I'm still not 100% sold. Mostly because I still kind of think Brzgalov is a playoff implosion waiting to happen. But Giroux's been really good. 2nd in the league with points, with 19 points overall. And you sort of can see the logic behind why Philly did what they did. He's, you know, a franchise forward, and if you can get him cheaper than Carter, who's really struggled, and Richards, who hasn't actually been great in LA, Giroux's looked really, really good for Philly. So he's my 3rd star.
I got Richards on my fantasy team. He's been killing me.
Yeah, he hasn't been great, and I still think he'll turn it around, but he's been a big disappointment.
I like that you said Giroux's been having a heck of a season after dropping the first F-bomb on our podcast. Just trying to even things out.
Exactly.
All right.
And Hal Gill, this fucking guy, he's my 2nd star of the week.
Nice.
And, just... gets the 2nd star for doing Hal Gill type things, and we talked about the injuries the defense has had. They've been decimated, and he never stands out, especially on the stat sheets, but he's doing those smart veteran leader things that we need him to do. And I think he's finally starting to get some recognition, and he can add this to the list of honors. I think this is probably right at the top, actually. But
I can't believe we turned around on him.
Yeah,
especially you.
Hated that signing. Yeah, I really hated that signing. All I could think about was that big lumbering oaf that was in Boston and Toronto. I just thought was going to get killed if you couldn't clutch and grab for 18 minutes a game. But he has been so good in Montreal.
Yeah.
I've done a complete 180 on the guy. I have so much respect for him. He's just the consummate professional. And, like I said, the accolades keep coming in. And he is now my second star on this week's edition of the 2-4.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So far, you've 1 and 2. You've done well.
Thank you. And 1st star of the week, Tomáš Plekanec, had 3 helpers the other night in New York, and he's just doing what we expect out of him at this point. And he's not the biggest star on the team. He'll never have the sort of cachet that Gionta, Cammy, and maybe Gomez have, or PK has at least. But
Gomez.
Not the salary at least, and even outside of Montreal, there's probably more people who could still name Scott Gomez than Tomáš Plekanec.
Yeah.
But you can make the argument he's our best all-around forward, and he's just doing what he always does, which is, lots of assists, goals when we need them, very reliable defensively, and just a really good, really reliable all-around player. He's never going to be that 85-90 point guy, but you can pencil him in every single season for at least 70 points, and it's, you need players like that.
It's with him, it's the intangibles too. I mean, it's not the points per se, it's what he does, the minutes he can play on the power play, the penalty kill, the, I don't know that he's a leadership guy and that he'll speak up in the dressing room per se, but you don't see him take a shift off. I don't think he knows how. He's one of the best, and I've said this many times, and people outside of Montreal probably think it's an overstatement and a homer thing to say, but I stand by it, and I believe he's one of the best two-way players in the game. I love the fact that we still have him for four more seasons. It's a good first star.
Well, thank you. And a pretty cap-friendly number, too.
Yeah.
All things considered. Yep. And you're right. I think the guy's got a Selke Trophy nomination in his future, at least.
He should. Can I do mine now?
If you think you can follow those three up.
What if I don't? Should I just end the podcast?
No. I want to hear your
three. Okay, good.
Mostly so I can mock you.
They're not that bad. All right, number three.
I'll be the judge of that.
This is the it's called the bullshit one. Number three, for the Habs fans. And here's why. I liked the fact that Ottawa and New York Friday, Saturday, and I'm sure this just annoys everybody else. No, I know this annoys everybody else in the league, but they just travel so well, or not even travel necessarily, but are everywhere, and not in that Boston Red Sox wearing my pink baseball cap way. They're legitimate Habs fans everywhere. They took over Ottawa on Friday night in the arena there. They did a very good job of being heard in a city that's not easy to be heard in on Saturday night in New York. I love watching Habs games where no matter where you are, you're going to get a very strong supporting fan base. So I'm giving the Habs fans a third star because I was enjoying the fact that you couldn't at moments tell which arena they were in on Saturday night.
Number two, fun. Go on.
No, please interrupt me.
There's a few fan bases like that in every league. The Steelers fans are like that in the NFL. You know, even though the Red Sox bandwagon is getting a bit crowded, Boston fans are like that in Major League Baseball.
I'm off it, though.
It's a lot of fun, and yeah, it's great when you're watching a game, and I mean, obviously, you know, if it's a game in Tampa or Phoenix, it's almost 75% Habs fans, it seems like.
Yeah.
But New York, I mean, that's a hockey town, and that's a hockey arena. Like you said, they made themselves heard.
If Sean and I used to host a show on radio. Some of you kids may have heard of radio. It used to exist. And we used to hand out our three stars there, but we also had a thing called the beef. And if I had a beef this week, it'd be with that USA chant.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I know they need something to counter the Olé, but come on.
I think it was an homage to Hal Gill.
To Hal Gianta, Gomez, Gill. We have more Americans than most of the teams in the league.
Yeah.
Toronto might be the only team with more Americans. And I don't even know if that's true. I don't know the facts. Can I finally get my number two? Jesus. Number two, Lars Eller. Last week I know I gave him a star, and that one's for him finally showing up. This week, it's for that pass to Gustafsson alone. My favorite play of the week from any of the team. And Eller, I mean, that was beyond his years in terms of he knew where he was. He knew where Gustafsson was. Instead of going for the goal, he just, perfect pass. I mean, nobody should miss that. Gustafsson didn't, and I watched that one a few times over. Absolutely loved that assist on that goal. It's one of those assists that is worth far more than the goal, in my opinion. So Lars Eller, my second star.
That was a beauty.
That's all you got this time?
Yeah, no, go on, but yeah, it's gorgeous.
Okay. I wasn't mad that you had so little. I was mad. I was hoping you wouldn't interrupt me further. And number one, Maxwell House Pacioretty. A, because he...
Is that what we're calling him now?
That's what I just called him right now. Later I'll call him Max Power and we'll work out. We'll split the difference. But leads the team in goals. He's got five. And, all things considered, that was what we were really hoping, was he could come back and seem to be the same player he was last year. That seems to be the case. And also, he started a great foundation, the Max Pacioretty Foundation, in Montreal today, which is Monday, the 7th of November. He launched that today, and it's kind of looking to fill the void that left when Saku Koivu left, and his foundation kind of moved to Anaheim with him. I mean, it still has a branch in Montreal, but, having an active player on the team. So double star to Max for that. That's why he's my first star of the week.
Excellent. You know what? You proved me wrong. Those are three good stars.
Oh, thank you. Wait, what do you mean wrong?
Well, I was skeptical.
Because I knew you thought yours were better, but I didn't know you thought mine were going to suck.
And you know what? I think I'm giving your stars the edge this week.
Yes. You want to take a look at the schedule ahead?
Yeah, if you give me 30 seconds to pull it up.
Oh, my God.
Well, we got Edmonton tomorrow, that much I know. So that game's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, Edmonton unexpectedly in first in the Northwest.
Yeah, that came out. I mean, we've said this before, so there's no need to really go over it. But sometimes it just clicks suddenly. And I don't know that that's the team that is in Edmonton right now. Maybe it's just some talented kids riding a good spell and they'll fall back into place. But like we said, this isn't the last place team. And I'm excited. I'm really excited for tomorrow night's game. I really want to watch this game. And I don't remember the last time that was the case when the Oilers came into town. In fact, I went and saw them a few seasons ago live, and I was able to get tickets because it was the Oilers in town.
Yeah, but I mean, that city deserves a good hockey team. And, you know, to me, they look a lot like Pittsburgh did a couple of years ago and a lot like Chicago did a couple of years ago. And they're still missing some pieces. You know, Happy Boland's been great this year, but I think they'd still like to get a young goalie in there. But this team's built to last, and they are going to regress a bit. There's still going to be some growing pains, but I think this team's got a cup in its relatively near future.
Ryan Smith, great addition to this team. Not just for sentimental reasons. He seems to be the right guy to be kind of piloting these much younger stars in that city right now.
Agreed. So that's what we got Tuesday night. Another 7:30 puck drop. Seems like there's been a lot of those this year. Mm-hmm. And then got a little bit of a weirdish West Coast swing after that. Thursday we're at Phoenix. Mm-hmm. 9 o'clock puck drop against CD Surprising.
That's where I play Budai.
Yeah, I think so too. And
weird, you know, time, Phoenix, weird team, nobody cares. Put Budai in there.
I really don't care about that game. It's pretty funny. Although Phoenix has looked good, and I credit to Dave Tippett. A lot of people thought that team would fall apart without Brizgalov, and they're still chugging along. I think they're 7-4-2, if I remember correctly. And after that, Saturday night, Montreal at Nashville.
Right,
so
we've talked about this
versus
one.
Carey Price.
Mm-hmm. That's why I want Budai to play against Phoenix, because I think you got to go Price versus Rene. Plus Price, I don't know if it was the last time in Nashville. I believe it was, though. The last time Price played in Nashville, he made 50 saves. So, you know,
we lost.
It's the country music boy in the country music town. Let him go.
Yeah, he must love playing in Nashville.
Him and Jack White.
There you go. So that's the schedule up until next week, and then we'll be with you next Monday, and we'll take a look at the slate of games from that point forward.
I thought we had more. That's how we rounded out. Everyone's talking like the schedule's getting...
Well, let me check. Unless we play Sunday, then I'm not remembering.
No, I don't think we do. Let's edit this part out where we don't know what's going on.
This is thrilling. Thrilling radio.
It's just going to cut right from one thing to the next. And there you go. So that's our podcast for the week. That was me cutting back, by the way. All right. But in all seriousness, that'll wrap it up.
That will wrap it up. And just, yeah, we don't play Sunday. We do play Monday.
Monday. I hate Monday night games. Especially because we record this podcast on Monday, and now I'm thrown off what to do. Maybe we'll have to do it Sunday next week.
Maybe.
You got anything coming in the pipeline for what's going to be online?
Yeah, I do. I got a couple things that I honestly thought would be up by now, but I've been a bit sidetracked. But should be a Power Rankings column coming up.
Ooh, we haven't done that yet.
Exactly. So sort of take the temperature around the league, see where the Habs measure up. So I got that coming, and maybe something about hoping to get something out about the Oilers and, you know, comparing how they've built and where they are to how Montreal's built and where they are.
Very nice. And next week, once again, not sure yet who our guest will be, because I honestly don't know the West Coast bloggers nearly as well. But we'll be pulling somebody in for 5 minutes for fighting from one of those teams that we mentioned. Maybe we'll try and dig up someone from the Oilers. I think that'd be fun to talk to. And
Might be easier to get an Oilers blogger than pulling someone from the army of Phoenix.
All the Predators bloggers out there. And I've also got, It won't be out next Sunday. This one will come out, but we're working on kind of putting something together. I think it's going to be called What the Hell Happened, where it's going to essentially take a look at everything written about the Canadians and the NHL overall, put them together in a column, and it'll give you one kind of summary of the week that was around the Canadians and all that. So I've started kind of taking notes and getting ready to launch that next week. So still new stuff to discover on the Montreal Bias as we feel our way through this thing.
Indeed, so that'll do it. We'll see you next Monday.
And also on next podcast, I believe we're going to be start pulling on the people who contribute to the Montreal Bias as well for to do our little questionnaire and whatnot.
Works for me.
Well, of course it works for you. You're already on this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So
you don't care. All right, yeah. Let's do it. So once
check
again,
out at this point.
I know. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody. Love you.